we're talking about topics of Poalim, both discreetly and as a continuation. So this is a unit about Poalim, which hopefully you can kind of jump in the middle, for those of you joining us now, but it also draws and continues topics that we learned during the Zman, hopefully in a way that won't be redundant, but that should also be open to those coming in at this point. So essentially, we started to focus on yesterday. And by the way, I'd like to roughly go in order of the Gemaras, starting from the 6th and 7th Prakim, so around, let's say, Ayin Zayin, around there going on. But the topic that we started yesterday and that we'll continue a little bit today is kind of outside of this. It draws a little bit on the Gemaras at the beginning of that parak, but it's basically kind of mostly from places outside of these Prakim. But outside of that, we'll try to go roughly in order. And what we started to lay out yesterday was various categories of workers and employers and employee-employer relationships. And then we started talking about how that manifests itself halachically, about the fact that on the one hand, we find that if you have, let's say, for example, a poel being defined as opposed to a kavlan, a poel being somebody who's paid for his time rather than paid for a product. So if you're paid for your time, so there's an expectation that you will work at full power, you'll work at full speed, you'll devote all of your energies towards that particular employment. The Gemara quotes Yaakov as the role model here. While, at the same time, there are certain limitations. And among those limitations, we started to talk about yesterday one particularly interesting din, which we'll continue talking about now. And that has to do with the following process, the following mitzvah. It's a little known, a little appreciated din, and one of the issues we raised yesterday is maybe it's little appreciated because it's not really relevant to us. On the other hand, maybe it's very relevant to us. And that has to do with the concept of lo sir dabo b'farach. The pasuk in Parashas Bahar, Perek Chaf Hei of Sefer Vayikra, so the pasuk says, if you have first an Eved Ivri, pasuk talks about, say somebody, Nebuch, has financial hardship, falls on hard times, he's not able to support himself, so he sells himself as an Eved Ivri. So the pasuk says, you shouldn't treat him in a way that is too demeaning, it's too oppressive, you shouldn't give him avodas of it, you shouldn't essentially give him slave labor. And then a few psukim later, the Torah says, really talking about after he's already been freed, but somehow in this context, the Torah says, lo sir dabo b'farach, that one should not treat him with tremendous harshness, he shouldn't give backbreaking labor. So this prohibition in the Torah event against giving someone slave labor, very hard, difficult work, which the Rambam, based on the Torah's Kohanim, the Rambam defines, this is in the first parak of Hilchos Avadim, the Rambam defines this as work that has no end, that has no purpose. Apparently it's very psychologically demeaning. You can't figure out why you're doing it. So within that context, so the question comes up, is this relevant only to an Eved, or is this relevant to other people? If it's relevant only to an Eved, so then we can understand why we don't talk about this so much halacha l'maaseh nowadays. You don't hear so many shiurim about this, because not too many of us have avadim. But is it possible that it has relevance outside of the Eved context? So we saw yesterday that the Medrash of Torah's Kohanim, it sounds like it's applying specifically only to an Eved, and not to a worker, not to a poel. But there was some disagreement on that point. That the Sefer Achinuch writes that Al-Pi Derech HaMusar, it applies to a worker also. That Maker HaDin is only by an Eved, but Al-Pi Derech HaMusar is by a worker too. And the Maharam Rutenberg says it applies to Poalim also, because there's a Kal V'chomer from Eved. And what the Torah tells us also in Parashas Bahar, Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim V'Avadim Le'Avadim, that you're not supposed to be an Eved. So if that's the case, that's telling us as a Kal V'chomer, any leniency that an Eved has, for sure, a worker who's not an Eved has that leniency too. So if we can't work our avadim too hard, then for sure a poel has the same schutz. On the other hand, why might you disagree? Why might you say that it doesn't apply to a poel?
You choose.
So one suggestion that was offered yesterday is that because he's willingly entering into the equation, and Eved has no choice, therefore maybe he has this defense, but maybe a Poel shouldn't have this defense. Or the other point, which is invoked by the Magen Avraham, is because of the Poel Yochel Lachzer B'Chatzi Hayom principle. And just to say that very briefly, there is this idea, which the Gemara has in the sixth parak of Bav Metzia. It also appears in the first parak of Bav Metzia. For those of you who are learning the first parak over the course of this year, it's the Gemara and Daf Yud as well. There the Gemara says that Poel Yochel Lachzer B'Chatzi Hayom. A Poel has the right to quit in the middle of any time period. He's not committed to stay on beyond any point that he wants to, and he has the right to quit. So the Magen Avraham says, based on that, this din does not apply to a poel. And as we posited yesterday, you could look at that two ways. You could say it's just a conceptual statement, that this din shows you that a poel is not an eved, and this is an eved halacha, so it doesn't apply. Or you could understand it more practically, that the whole concern is that you'll impose this backbreaking labor on somebody who has no ability to quit. But since a poel can quit at any time, it's impossible to force this labor on him. And therefore, maybe it's simply a practical point. The poel can quit, therefore he's never going to be forced to do something he doesn't want to do. And we mentioned that Rabbi Yashiv quoted in a number of places, what Yashu says based on that, that if the reality is, and we'll discuss this a little bit more today, that if the reality is that the poel cannot quit, then we do have this thing. The only time it wouldn't apply is when the person has the right to pull out, has the ability to pull out, and if the facts are that he can't, then we will have such a thing. So that we mostly discussed yesterday. Everybody basically up to speed? Any issues, any concerns?
So what was the conceptual way of understanding this?
You could say that it's not really about the fact that the poel could quit. You could say that the statement, poel yochel lachzer b'chatzi hayom, is kind of shorthand for saying that a poel is not an eved. That an eved can't quit, a poel can quit. So invoking the Gemara's... Sorry? Right.
So
you said that would be a better line to use.
No, I'm saying that they are... About them.
Right, so therefore, since a poel is not an eved, and the din, the one, if you want to pick one line in the Gemara that really reflects that, it's poel yochel lachzer b'chatzi hayom, so we invoke that just as a way of saying poel and eved is different. Hi. I didn't get your name, I'm sorry.
David. Defoch.
Shalom, how are you?
Good. So according to Rabbi Yashiv, since a poel can't quit, mm-hmm. he is like an eved. That's the idea.
Or? No, since a poel can quit.
Oh,
right.
He can quit.
Right. The fact that poel, what we mean is that
it's
different than that. The conceptual point is that a poel in general can quit. So the Magen Avraham invokes that to say that this din of eved doesn't apply to a poel. You can't work your eved too hard, but your poel, you can give him whatever job you want. So the question is, why is that? Is it because simply it's an eved principle, and poel yochel lachzer b'chatzi hayom shows you that poel and eved are different? Or, that's the conceptual understanding. Or maybe what he means is, no, it's a practical point. That the iser is, don't force someone to do something demeaning that they can't back out of. And since the poel can back out, he's never forced. If he doesn't like the job, he'll just leave. So therefore, it's not a conceptual point, it's a practical point. The fact is, he could leave. But what if the facts are that he can't leave? And there are such circumstances, I'll mention some more in a minute. So if the facts are that he can't leave, so then, says Rabbi Yashiv, this din ceases to be true. And therefore, this pasuk is relevant to us, even if we don't have avadim. But if we have workers, so then this din is relevant to us in 2013 in America as well. Hi.
If he can't leave... Is that like only contractually he can leave, or like he can leave, but then like he won't have a job, he won't have money?
Right, well he won't have a job, I mean if let's say he's a poor person and he won't be able, if the reality is, so that probably still doesn't change the facts. But there are other circumstances where maybe you could say that the picture is painted as such that even if we say theoretically he could leave, there will be other consequences that will make it so untenable that that might negate this. And we'll talk about that more in a second. So far, what have we seen? That you could say this din doesn't apply to us nowadays because it only applies to avadim. But now we see that maybe no, it could apply to any worker or any poel, so therefore it could apply to us nowadays in 2013 if we have workers. So now we can expand this even more, because probably very few of the people in this room, college students, probably very few of you have employees working for you by the hour. If you do, it's very impressive. But you might say, okay, so it's relevant to some people, but it's not relevant to too many people in this room. Not necessarily true. Says Rabbeinu Yonah in Shari Tshuva, in Shari Gimel, Samach, in Gimel Samach, that any time somebody is pushed into doing something without their full consent, if you create a circumstance where somebody feels pressured, so let's say you're an intimidating person, not necessarily a person's boss, but you're somebody who, because you're so distinguished or you're so tall or whatever it is, so you're going to create the impression on the person that they can't say no to you. So then that has the effect of violating Mosir Debo Befarach. It's a fascinating idea. And if you pressure people with your presence, with your demeanor, into doing something, so then you're going to violate the sister. So that's going to expand it potentially to any of us. And there is an attitude in Poskim, the Brisker Rav, and the Chazon Ish, and a few others, took this as a very real practical point. So for example, if you want to see some examples of how it was put into practice in the current era, if you look in the Tshuva Svat Hagos, the Tshuva of Moshe Sternberg, Chelik Aleph and Simin Tavkuf Mem, he has a discussion about this issue. And he says, based on this Rabbeinu Yonah, that, for example, the Brisker Rav would not ask any of his Talmidim to do anything for him. He wouldn't say, get my hat or something like that, because he was concerned that they would feel intimidated by the nature of the relationship and they wouldn't feel like they had a choice. If he knew they were happy to bring his hat, that'd be one thing. But he was afraid that even a small task like that, bringing my hat, because they might feel like they can't say no, that he would be in violation of this principle. And he goes on, he has a few other examples. He writes there that there was an announcement in the yeshiva, so that's certainly relevant to us, that if you don't put away your svarim and take off the yeshiva shelf, so then you're in violation of lo sirda. Why? Because since other people are now going to have to put it back in order to be able to function, in order to be able to learn, so you're pushing people against the wall to do something that they didn't otherwise agree to do. They don't have the option of agreeing or not agreeing because they have to clean up after you in order to be able to learn. So apparently, as he reflects in the tshuva, that's also such a consideration. And then it's a surprising application, right?
Yeah, then sort of, there's so much removed there. I mean, it's not necessarily, you're not cutting one specific person to do it, and it's not
right.
Necessarily male that a Jew's going to do it, or that anybody's going to do it.
Well, it's pretty likely in the yeshiva, but the fact is that whoever ends up doing it is doing it not because he agreed to do this task, but because he is pressured into this situation. You could ask questions on this, but there's probably an even more fundamental question that you might ask. So before you get to that, I'll mention one more example that he has from the tshuva, and then tell me what you theoretically could ask on this. That another example he gives is, he just tells a story there, but just again reflects the fact that Poskim took this issur as applying in broad context. He says that there was an episode where Rabbi Chanan Wasserman and Chazon Ish were together at some event, at some fundraiser or something, I forgot exactly what it was, and Rabbi Chanan was pressuring the Chazon Ish to say a Dvar Torah. And the Chazon Ish was demurring, he wasn't so interested in speaking. And Rabbi Chanan said, it sounds like he was kind of just joking around, he said, he doesn't think it'll be too hard for the Chazon Ish to say a Dvar Torah upon request. So he says, I don't think I'm in violation of Lo Sir Deval Befarach. And the Chazon Ish apparently responded, I'm not so sure. So Rabbi Chanan got very nervous at that response and begged for forgiveness, and that was the end of the conversation. So he records this in the tshuva, that any type of pressuring, and you see the panelist was the chazan issues, you la'alacha, that any type of pressuring somebody to do something that they're not fully ready to do might be a violation of this concept. And I think I mentioned yesterday that the Sefer L'Reacha Kamocha is a beautiful set on Ben Adam L'Chaveiro Mitzvos, where he has read volumes. He has many, many volumes already, so he's got past the more well-known mitzvahs. So he has half a volume on this, where he brings many such applications, and he has a lot of examples there. That's the style of the Sefer is written. He says, well, to imagine Reuven and Shimon are doing this, Reuven and Shimon are doing that. So he has a bunch of examples there where he says any type of pressure, some of them you could really argue on some of the examples, you could definitely take a look. Anytime you're basically putting someone in a position to do something they don't want to do, so that they have to do it because of your pressure, so then you're in violation of this din, unless, of course, he goes through, if it's a person's responsibility anyway, you know, a parent to a child's a different story, a boss to an employer for his actual job's a different story, et cetera, et cetera. He talks about what if it's the toelas, the whole discussion of toelas, a concept that only applies to Hilchos Lashon Hara, does apply to other mitzvah, so there's a whole section in this volume devoted to the contemporary applicability of this issue. But there is a pretty fundamental question you could ask on Rabbeinu Yonah. Right, what question could you potentially ask? That here he's saying that if you pressure, it's not just your abbot, it's not just your official worker, but you pressure anybody to do something, that's a violation. Hi?
Well, if the Pope can quit, then he's not pressuring.
So that may or may not be true, right? You might say that the pole, by definition, I don't know if there's a question you're asking, but it's an interesting point. You're saying that if the Magen Avraham says it's okay for the pole because he could quit, so quitting is still for sure not comfortable. It's going to be much more uncomfortable than the Talmud with a hat or the Chazanish giving a Dvar Torah. So the assumption that any kind of even mild pressure on somebody is considered to be a violation, so if you're telling the Pohl either do this or quit, that's essentially what it sounds like for the Magen Avraham. That itself actually isn't, I don't know if that's at all what you meant, but that's actually also an interesting kasha on this whole thing, because there's no question if that's what the Magen Avraham means practically, he's certainly put in an uncomfortable position. Telling a guy, do this for me or quit, is much more intimidating than any of the other examples that Rav Sternbuch quotes in his tshuva, for the most part. But there's another issue here. Hi?
Maybe for like Divrei Rav, Divrei Talmud Mishomim, like who do you listen to? So mm-hmm. There, obviously, the person who's being told to do an aver is might be under a lot of pressure, and yet we still say it's completely his will. So why is this any different?
See, that answers into a question in general. Where do we say things are not really done of free will? That's a fascinating question. That there are areas in halacha. This is actually something, if you're interested in that point, that the L'Reacha Kamocha, I think in the back, he has the more lumdish pieces. So he has an essay about this, where he brings all the different instances in halacha where you find that, let's say, we need something to be done of your own free will. Right? Perhaps the most famous example comes up in Hilchos Gittin, right? A get has to be given the free will of the husband. And there's a whole very important consequential debate, what is called free will. If you pressure someone to do something, at what point do we say, well, listen, he can withstand the pressure if he wants to, so ultimately it's his decision, or do you say that pressure deprives someone of their free will? So it's an interesting discussion to have, which comes up in a lot of areas of halacha, and then as a side point, he has a whole collection of those points. But what another concern, Alex, you want
to... I'm not sure if it was said, but like the fact that we're applying the pasuk to be that of like a pressure means that what we said yesterday about the busy work wouldn't necessarily fall into that category, then like if we're using the pasuk in that type of circumstances, then are we by broadening it or also limiting it to the other specific cases of employer forcing, it's not considered pressure then.
I mean, so since the boss, that's actually, it's almost the question I was looking for. It's not exactly the question, but it relates to the question. And the point is, who said pressuring was ever the issue? Right, forcing somebody to do work, is that really the Isser of Lo Sirda? Right? What kind of language does the Torah use? Avodah Zavet, Parach. The point was, it's supposed to be hard work. It's backbreaking labor. So that was what the whole Isser was about. That the person with an Eved can't force him to do what the Rambam describes, work that's meaningless, work that's endless, it has no purpose. It wasn't any work. It was a specific type of work. So we started off with that being the work that an Eved can't be forced to do. And then we saw that maybe a Pohl has the same rule. A Pohl has to do his job, but he can't be forced to do things that are endless and pointless. So even if you want to expand it beyond the evident, beyond the pole, okay, but why should you say that any job, get me my hat, tell a Dvar Torah, why is that considered to be in this category? And that's why Alex was saying, if we're going to focus only on the fact that you're forcing it to happen, so then the boss will base it on that, not base it on the nature of the work that he's giving. So that's a pretty powerful question on that, Daniel. So you could take a couple of approaches. I don't know if there's an obvious answer. It's interesting. The Rechako Kamolcha, he does point out that it does seem, as much as the Ben Yonah is a little bit difficult for that reason, it does seem like the other Moni HaMitzvos, he notes that the Rambam and Sefer HaMitzvos also seems to support this reading. And a few other places we could identify where it does seem to be that this is a pretty widespread understanding, that forcing somebody to do something is going to be a violation of the Sisser, even if it's not, by definition, demeaning or backbreaking. Hi.
Why can't you just, maybe you could say this, just, oh, he's talking to Derech HaMusar, like this, Derech HaMusar.
You could, except that he doesn't identify it as such. So then, for halachic purposes, you could say some of these stories, you could certainly say the Chazon Ish, Rabbi Chanan story, how far do we want to go with it? So maybe some of them are up to Derech HaMusar, but the usage in the Rishonim, Rabbi Niona, in general, that attack has been brought, that attack so much, let's say that criticism has been brought against the whole Sefer Shari Tshuva as a halacha Sefer. The Shari Tshuva is a Musar Sefer by its very nature. So he has some pretty controversial statements, la halacha, which many will argue, look, the whole Sefer is not strict halacha, maybe it's more Musar, but it's not taken that way on a pashtus level. So if he's taking it as an absolute halachic point, so how do we explain that? Hi.
Can you say that Rabbeinu Yonah is being mechadish that the Isra is subjective and not objective?
Let's say it's subjective, though, but what is it? I mean, so therefore, the person, since he does, if he is an Eved, so then he's already got to do pretty demeaning stuff. We have a high threshold for what's really demeaning. If it's a worker, so then again, we understand the boss is going to tell him what to do, so just stop telling you get my hat or something like that is not going to rise to the threshold. But if he's not your boss in the first place, so then telling you to do anything is already... That's actually an interesting way of looking at it. It could be true. Right? You could say that anybody who's instructing anybody else to do something and there isn't an employee relationship already, that's ki'ilu, what's demeaning for an employer, which is an interesting, I don't know if anyone says that other than yourself, but it's an interesting, I think that's a viable mahalach. I mean, that could be true, that maybe the gradation for what's demeaning depends on what the expectations are. So since the Eved is expecting to do a certain type of work and the pole is expecting to do something a little less than that, and somebody who's not your employee is not expected to do anything, so telling him to do anything is going to be itself an issue. You know, Moshe raised the issue yesterday that, you know, aren't there other Isurim? He mentioned Achazarias. So that's true, as especially emphasized in the Sefer L'Reach HaKamocha, he fills a lot of pages talking about this. So he also mentions that if you act this way towards somebody, there are many other Isurim that you also are violating. We're just focusing on whether you're actually violating this din. But there are a number of other Isurim as well. So for example, again, a big Bav Metzia concept, Onas Devarim is a big one. We know the Mishnah says in the end of the fourth parak above Metzia that there's a prohibition to hurt someone with words. And the Mishnah has all kinds of examples of what's considered to be onas devarim. So there are many who have written about what's the common theme among the examples. So Rabbi Bleich, for example, in one of his Hebrew articles actually, it was printed in one of the rabbinical journals, Rabbi J. David Bleich, has an article where he maintains, and others say things similar to this, that the examples of onas devarim in the Mishnah, which, you know, famous example, if you go into a store and ask how much something costs and you have no intent of buying it, or something like that. So what's the thread between all these examples? So he writes that any time you're treating someone as inferior to you, that's anas dvar. Because if you're going to buy something in a store, you ask how much it costs, that's reasonable, because maybe you'll benefit him, maybe you'll pay for it. But if you're not going to buy it, so you're basically turning this guy into your slave, so to speak. So then, because why should he answer your questions? Is there nothing in it for him? Right? So what's the nature of that relationship? So he writes, that's an example of a Nos Devarim. So you could have a similar type of thread here. So a Nos Devarim type of issue. That if you have a worker, okay, you understand, he's going to work for you. But if a person doesn't work for you, and you make him do things for you because of circumstances, so then it seems to be it's a Nos Devarim. And then maybe that's also the nature of this sister as well. So the Chassam Sofer is Chidushim Torah Chaim in Kuf Samachtes, It's where that the Magen Avraham was also. So the Chassam Sofer understands it as a type of gezel, as a type of theft, that basically since your services are worth money, so if you're going to take an object away from somebody without his permission, so that would be gezel. And if you, this is the question again of pressure, so if you pressure someone to give you something that they don't really want to give you, so that's what we call avak gezel, but it's a form of gezel. There's different ways to take something against somebody's will. You could either rip it out of their hands or take it at gunpoint, or you could make them so uncomfortable they'll give you something they don't want to give you. So that's what we call avak gezel. Now you ask for somebody's lunch and nobody doesn't want to give it to you. So to here, if you pressure someone to spend time working for you, and time is worth money, so then it's also a type of gezel. Which it could be, but that would be a different din. That would be something from a different source. So maybe one could say that the whole nature of this Isser is also in the spirit of Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim, that we have an imperative to create a harchaka, to create a space between Avdus and what we actually do. That Avdus is an area we're not supposed to go into. Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim, lo Avadim me'Avadim. So therefore, a worker has certain rights, otherwise he comes too close to being an Eved. And therefore, also, if you make somebody work for you without pay, and without free will to do so or not, and they don't choose to do that, so then that also is turning them into Avadim, and that's the nature of this pasuk, which comes in conjunction then with Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim.
I mean, if that's the case, that if you're making them do harder work than generally, I mean, if it's Gezel, that's the approach you're going to, so wouldn't you want to look at the market value? I mean, if somebody rents a poel, and he's paying him, so you should look and see if other poelim are doing this similar thing to what he's doing. If they are, that, I mean, the going rate which he's paying also includes this laborious or backbreaking,
right,
whatever the labor is.
Yeah, I think that's for sure true, that if all poelim in the world are going to do activities, you know, what exactly is going to follow into, what's exactly going to fall into that category is going to be somewhat subjective. Except, it's interesting, actually, if you look at the Rambam's examples, right, so they're not necessarily subjective. You know, there are certain things you could make up certain actions. I don't know, you know, whatever it is, clean out the coffee cups. You know, whatever it is, you can make up certain actions. You could say, well, maybe I think they're demeaning, maybe they're not. Depends on what workers are normally asked to do. But the Rambam's examples, the Torah's Kodesh's examples, when he talks about something which is endless or something which is pointless, so pointless, that's not going to really actually even go to what the market does. That's just part of the definition, that to give somebody busy work, to say, do work just because I want to see you working. So maybe that might be independent of any market consideration. It might be that even if the situation were that in America people were hiring workers and making them do this, we might still say it's wrong. We might still say that that is outside the category of being a pole. That's already something that is proscribed in this pasuk, and maybe that might still be a problem. So to one extent, I could hear it being subjective and market-based, but I think there's some of the things that this definition would address that probably are independent. It goes to the very definition of what it means to be a worker as opposed to being an Eved. Hi.
Just generally speaking, like when we study Hilchos Poelim, do you feel like we're responsible to like learn about the different types of labor that existed when the Rambam wrote it, to like know what he's referring to? Or you don't?
So sometimes yes and sometimes no. I think, you know, sometimes that will be the case. Sometimes the Gemara is going to give examples that are very context-dependent. But I think it's interesting, specifically the point that Aaron is raising, that this case here, you could say there are things that will be demeaning subjectively, but the definition of something that's endless or pointless is not really subjective. So that's perhaps very much to the point that maybe the Torah is saying here that you can't create the avdus, and this is another iser that is in conjunction with that. That's part of that idea. So to turn for a moment. Hi.
So if we're saying in terms of the other applications, like the Bar Torah case, others, is also sort of an instance of gezeila.
Right, so gezeila would be harder to say in the case of the Bar Torah.
Right,
but basically forcing somebody to work for you would be gezel, according to the way the Chassam Sofer put it. And now you might say, we go back to your market point, okay, but if it could be an insignificant gezeila, right? If it's pass me my hat, so how much would anyone charge for that? How much could you possibly get a worker to charge for passing the hat over? So in a chanami, it's probably going to be less than a shava pruta. It's going to be a very insignificant amount, but that's not necessarily relevant to an iser. Right? And we know that the standard of shava pruta is you have to return it after the fact, or a bezdin can collect it. But as far as the iser usually applies across the board. So even if it's a minuscule kind of value, now clearly most of the world is not makbid on that level. Right? Clearly these kvedas, like I said, most of us aren't even aware there is such an iser. But maybe one could distinguish in terms of what people are commonly okay with and when things really kind of get to a greater degree. Certainly, alpi the derech hamusar that's been invoked, it's a sensitivity that's, I think, beyond what most of us are used to, and it's a very helpful sensitivity. So just to invoke for a moment, especially in the context for those of us who have been learning Bav Metzia all year long, it's especially relevant to invoke the writings of Rabbi Dr. Aaron Levine, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. I don't know how many of you were in YU together with him. He's been passed away already 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago. But it was a tremendous Tzadik and Talmud Chacham who really built up the whole field of business and halacha and economics and halacha, and wrote many very important books in English on this topic. So he discusses in a very serious halacha in his works. So he has a fascinating chiddush on this point, really very fascinating idea, which is also relevant to mention in this kind of introductory context. So he says, again, his books exist, they're in English, they're economics and Jewish law, public policy and Jewish law, moral issues in the marketplace. So he discusses this issur. So he has a couple of discussions about what he calls the mean boss and how halacha regulates the behavior of the mean boss. So first of all, in terms of lo sir de lo b'farach, so he assumes that that does apply to a polel, either as a matter of halacha like the Maharam Rutenberg or as a matter of mustar like the Sefer Echinuch. And he says, so therefore, if a boss feels that he wants to give busy work to the employee, he just likes to see his employees working, so that he would be in violation of this iser, that his only right is to have the workers working, and they have to be available all the time. That's the nature of a poll, so they have to be there to, they have to be able to be ready to work, but he can't make them work just as busy work, because that's what the Rambam describes, what the Torah's Kohen describes as being avodah sovet. Then in another one of his essays on this topic, he says really a fascinating application. So let's say as follows. So we know that, and this we started to discuss yesterday, that the governing codes that address a worker and an employer, as we mentioned yesterday, there are four different places they come from. They come from the Torah and the Gemara, and they come from the agreement, whatever agreements the two parties have made, and they come from Dina de Malchus Adina, and they come from Minaga Medina, as the Gemara itself invokes. So therefore, we have to know exactly how the parts play out. So as this is a sugya later on, around Daf Pei Gimel, we'll try to get to it a little bit in order. So we'll come back to this point. But there, the Gemara talks about a kol k'minaga Medina in terms of work hours. That the poel, a din Torah, the poel, based on psukim, is that a poel works from morning to night. Now, nowadays, we don't have that kind of a structure. Let's say it's 9 to 5 or whatever the local minig is, but the local minig seems to establish a different hours for what a poel works, and that becomes his work hours. So, all right, let's assume like that. So let's assume that nowadays a modern poel doesn't have the expectation that he's going to work from dawn until dark. He has an expectation that he'll work from 9 to 5, let's say. But what if the boss wants to say, and let's assume there was no negotiation about this when he was hired as a worker, as a by-the-hour worker, as a poel, and once he's there already, the boss says, by the way, no personal calls. You can't take any personal calls on your cell phone, and for sure you can't use his phone to make any personal calls at all. Not that you can't call China for 2 hours, but you can't even, your wife calls for a minute, you can't take the call for a minute. So does the boss have the right to do that? Again, this wasn't contracted beforehand. He'd hired you as a worker with the normal expectations. Does the boss have the right to say that you can't make any personal calls, take any personal calls, you can't check if it's your wife calling to tell you this emergency? Does he have the right to do that? Sorry? So you think he does have the right to do that?
What right does the worker have to take the call?
What right does the worker have to take the call? So that's an interesting question itself. So he has a fascinating application where he puts together two different dinim to get to the following principle. He says like this. Says, first of all, there is a Mishnah in Bava Kamma, a Daf Kufi Tes, which I didn't put on the Marmar Kobos, I could add it later. So there the din is as follows. Let's say you give a worker, and there are different nuances depending on what kind of worker it is, but let's say you give a worker a piece of cloth to make something out of, or a piece of wood to make something out of. And so he's carving the wood, so there are pieces of the wood that fall off, little shavings. It's not worth a lot of money, but it's something. Okay, so now because he does this job, he has some wood clippings maybe he can make into something else. So the Mishnah says that these things that fall off, these shavings that fall off the wood are certain similar categories. This excess material in small quantities belongs to the worker. Even though theoretically it should be the boss's, if the boss provided the material and said, make this into something fancy, it's his, he should get it all back. If it's not completely negligible, if it's not just dust that falls to the ground, it's something, even though it's small, it should be the boss's. And that is an interesting din, that this only applies if the worker works on his own premises, but if he works in the boss's premises, so then it is the property of the boss. So what's the nature of this idea that the worker gets to keep this little excess material? The Rambam writes that the boss is not makbid. Okay. But what does he mean that he's not makbid? He's not makbid because it's not of value, per se? Seems that it's worth something. So the way Rabbi Levine understands it is that there is a basic assumption here in Halacha that in a situation where it doesn't really cost the boss anything significant, and that's where the Eino Makbid language comes from, it's not of great value, that it's in the boss's interest to provide minor benefits to the worker. That if the worker will get a little bit of benefit from what he's doing, and is not going to be begrudged this small little profit, so then he's going to be a more effective worker. And that ultimately it's in the worker's best interest that he should get this. And therefore, if he wants to get good work, and it's in the employer's best interest, because the worker will work better. So if the employer wants to know that the worker is not going to be sneering and begrudging and doing a half-hearted job, it's in his interest to try to provide him with the benefits that don't cost him a lot, that don't cost him anything significant, but make the worker happier. So first of all, he has that assumption, he has that principle, that something that makes the worker happier in his work environment is in the best interest of the employer and will get him better work. Hi, I didn't get your name, I'm sorry.
Andy.
Hi.
So just because it's in his best interest, does that mean that he logically has to provide it?
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like this is a basic expectation that since it's a combination of factors that it'll help him, and it's not a significant value that it's really worth him being makbid on. Right? So the combination of the fact that it's no real skin off his back, and it makes the worker work more productively, so therefore that's the basic expectation. The halacha has assigned this property to the worker. Now, if it's working on his premises, so why should this not apply? So then he writes there, he's quoting from the later Svarim, that since he can supervise the work directly, so then that will provide the productivity guarantee. But if the work's happening somewhere else where he can't supervise it, so it's in his interest to make sure the worker is not cursing him out when he's not there, and therefore giving him this benefit is in his best interest. That's step one. Hi.
Hi.
What about the fact that, I mean, this, we don't say that this is a halacha anymore, but just the fact that, like, Chazal said that a worker who's benching shouldn't say the last bracha to save the...
Yes, we actually discussed that yesterday, which is actually, it's actually very relevant to this. You know, the point is that, first of all, that is the Din Yekir HaDin, but then, as the Aruch HaShulchan writes in Kuf Tzari Aleph, that nowadays nobody has that expectation that the worker won't finish benching, and therefore, even if the boss would want to be makbid on it, he wouldn't have the right to, because the minig hamakom is that this is considered to be a given. That this is so. There is, you know, basically, as Ephraim asked yesterday, we mentioned these four factors. It's a hierarchy. It's not really a hierarchy. They seem to interact in sometimes unexpected ways. So here, even though that's what the Mishnah says, but the minig hamakom is different, and that's what the Aruch HaShulchan writes, that the boss nowadays couldn't even fight that minig. That's the expectation. Hi.
What about, could they both agree that a contract where we're going to see the fourth
brother? Right, so presumably yes. Presumably this is something if they initially, when they made the deal, said, listen, I know it's crazy, but this is what I want from you. So then he has the right to, even though we discussed during the semester that it's not so clear, that that's true, but it sounds like for this it should be true. But now, in terms of that then, so then it has a fascinating application. Which is a little bit arguable, but it's a fascinating finish. So the din is, as we mentioned, the worker has the right to quit. But there are many circumstances where it doesn't apply, and this we discussed at length during the semester, that according to the Ritva, the Shach disagrees, but according to the Ritva, the Levi could have a contract not to be able to quit. Or also, if he's going to cause any loss to the employer, he can't quit. The assumption is, when we say he can quit because the only thing he's doing is it's going to force the employer a little bit of annoyance and effort to get somebody else. But if, let's say, he started a job that's going to be ruined if he leaves it undone, so that's called a davar ha'avud, so under those circumstances, the worker can't quit. And the Chazon Ish had a chiddush that if he it takes any amount of time to replace him, so that's considered to be a davar ha'avud. So you can't really quit mamish b'emtza hayom if that means that they can't immediately replace you. So you can only quit with the amount of time that gives fair notice to the boss to actually replace you without incurring any kind of loss. So because, hi?
When we say you can't quit, does that mean you can't quit, like, period, or you can't quit without repercussions?
So, without repercussions, right? You can't expect to get paid your salary for your work.
You technically could quit.
Right. Physically speaking, there's no jail, there's no cells, and there's no bars on the door.
Like a slave.
Right. But you are essentially, if you're going to lose out your salary for what you did already, then you may feel you're basically have your hands tied. So, normally, when the worker can quit, we mean that he's entitled to full salary for whatever he's done. Not for the time he didn't work, but the full agreed upon salary for the time he did work, and that he can't be kept from doing that. But we see that's not always true. So, as Rabbi Levine notes, so he first works off the assumption that, especially in a modern context, it's very rare that this will actually be true, that the worker can actually quit. Because one of these exceptions is very likely to apply. So it says, and especially if you take the Ritva's view, which he kind of presents as the accepted halachim was a little bit debated. If you take the Ritva's view that the worker could contract out of this, could sign a, make a kinyan that he's not going to quit, so what's the whole point of this benefit of allowing him to quit, if it's not always going to be there? So he assumes that it's really all a psychological protection, that we are worried of the psychological mindset of a person feeling like he is enslaved, like he has the status of an eved. And therefore, the halacha gives him this right, which he could sign away, theoretically, but even the fact that he could sign it away mitigates this feeling that he is enslaved, because he has that kind of control. And one of the questions we posed when we learned the sugya and all the details during the semester was, you know, what exactly does the Torah mean? When the Torah says, Ki liban Yisrael avadim, and the Gemara says, Pol yoch halacha v'chatzi ayom, does the Gemara mean to say that that's the halacha the Torah is trying to convey? Or is it a more general concept? The Torah saying, don't treat people like avadim. And one example is that he can quit. But it could be other examples. So along those lines, says the Eilim, that in practice, what does this din mean? In practice nowadays, it almost always will not mean that the worker can actually get up in the middle of the day and walk out. That will generally not be the case. So therefore, it has to manifest itself in other ways. And so, for example, he invokes, as a reflection of this, that if you tell people that they can't communicate with anyone during the day, that if there's a crisis at home and their wife is trying to reach them, they can't open up the phone to see what the message is, that they can't have any basic connection to the outside world, then the mindset that's created is one of avdus. And that is essentially the modern-day reflection of Pol Yochel Lachzu V'Chatzi Yayom, which I think is a fascinating application. So then he wants to say, so how far do you go with that? Right? So you have to give certain benefits, you know, a certain degree of connection, but how far do you go? So basically you have to have a country club kind of environment. Listen, only work if you feel like it. I don't want you to feel like too much of an advent. So, you know, if you'd like to do something good, if not, I understand, you can do it tomorrow. So what do we mean by this? So he assumes that this is all connected to the first din, the din of the Mishnah in Bava Kamma about the wood shavings, that it works off a net benefit to the employer principle. That these two dinim come together, and that not having your employee feel like he's a slave is ultimately to the benefit of the employer. And therefore, you have to accord him these minimal benefits as long as that remains true. As long as the employer continues to benefit in the net picture. That if the overall result is that the worker will be happy and productive because he's not treated like an abbot, so therefore whatever benefits will have that goal, that is the expectation the worker will be given those benefits. But if they reach a point where it's no longer benefiting the employer, you're telling them they could take off half a day and surf the internet, so, and then all the other workers see that happening and they do that too, so the employer is losing out. So if he's losing out, he's not likely to do this, but to the extent that it's consistent with him getting maximal productivity from the workers, so then the idea that the worker shouldn't feel like an eved is put into practice this way. Alex?
Just if halacha is building a relationship between an eved and a poa, is there any way halacha would differentiate between a male and a female worker, or it should be the
possibly. That's an interesting question. I have to maybe explore that. Now, I can't keep you here against your will past mincha time. That was the deal we made yesterday. So there is a 8:05 mincha. So at least next week, I don't know what time it goes to. So but at least for this week, we're going to work off that structure that we're going to allow people to get through. Five minchas, just quickly, chazer we spoke about. And then maybe we'll continue with a different angle of this tomorrow. And so far, everyone follows. Everything makes sense. All right, so basically, what did we add on today to what we spoke about yesterday? So we added on, basically, with Rabbeinu Yonah's point that applies not just to avadim and not just to workers, but anybody who you're pressuring doing something they don't want to, that could be a violation of avodas parach. And we mentioned the tshuva from Rav Sternbach. We brought several practical examples of how that was put into play by the Brisker Rav and the Chazon Ish and others following this Rabbeinu Yonah. And we raised the question of, It seems that other Rishonim agree with it also, but how does it fit the Pasuk? The Pasuk's talking about a certain kind of work. So we had a couple of suggestions, a suggestion that maybe it's subjective, that what's considered demeaning depends on what the expectations are to begin with. We mentioned the Chazon Ish, the Chasam Sofer rather, that it's a type of gezel, that you're forcing, so just like you could pressure someone to give you something, and it'd be a bagzel if you pressure them to work for you, and that time is worth money, so that's a type of gezel also. And we also suggested that it's in the spirit of Kilib Nishra'al Avadim, that basically the Torah is telling us that we can't force people to do things for us that they don't want to do, because that would be Kilib Nishra'al Avadim. The question was also kind of raised, intentionally or not, that it does seem to be a little bit in contradiction to the Magen Avraham, because the Magen Avraham says since the Pole could quit, therefore this din doesn't apply, so the Pole is definitely going to feel pressure not to do something where his only alternative is to quit, more pressure than Rabbeinu Yonah is talking about, so it's hard a little bit to reconcile the two from that perspective. And then we mentioned Rabbi Levine's application of this to the basic contemporary business world, that to give your worker busy work is going to be at least a violation of Derech HaMusar according to the Chinuch, or Halacha Maker HaDin according to Maharam Rutenberg. And then he went on to say in other writings that this is true also about providing certain minimal benefits such as communication in a reasonable way. to be able to take short, brief personal calls and the like, even on the company phone. Because he noted that here the Mishnah in Kuf Yud Tes and Bava Kamma, which says the worker has the right to the shavings that come off of the material, and as long as it's working on his premises, not on the boss's premises, because the Ramah says, Eino Makbid, that the understanding is that if something is not much skin off the back of the employer and will make the employee happy, the assumption is it's in everyone's interest to make the employee happy and to not have him cursing the boss behind his back. And that will make a more productive work environment, and it's less necessary if he's working in the boss's premises because then he is supervised. And then he went on to combine this with the Din of Kol Yachal Achsi B'chatzi Hayom, which is there so the Kol should not even psychologically feel like an Eved. And even though in practice there are so many limitations on the Din, that it doesn't seem to be that this is really true, the Kol can actually quit. And yet the Din is supposed to provide the psychological benefit. So then it seems to be that other types of manifestations of how a person shouldn't feel like he's forced into avdus are imposed by the salacha. So, for example, being cut off from the outside world, not being able to know at all if there's some kind of emergency message coming in, would also have an avdus component. And the guideline for how far is too far is as long as this all contributes to a productive work environment, so then that would be the expectation. But if it got to the point where it's taking away from work productivity, so then it would no longer be true. Okay, so those are some of the basic points for today. So tomorrow we'll go into a little bit of a different angle. And I wish everyone a wonderful evening. Anybody else want to address the email list?